Sometimes people ask me about books and material on sexual addiction. And one book, actually most anything by Patrick Kearns is going to be good. You have to watch for his Calvinism. He's a former Presbyterian preacher. But one of the books that is a classic in the field is Out of the Shadows, Understanding Sexual Addiction by Patrick Kearns. And it's published by Hazelden, H-A-Z-E-L-D-E-N, Publishers. You can get that Barnes & Noble or most in your local bookstores. The other one is Contrary to Love, Helping the Sex Addict by Patrick Kearns. And again, that's from Hazelden. There are a number of other books out there, some that I'll mention toward the conclusion of this lesson. There are some websites, too, that you may be interested in going to that are, I think, in our PowerPoint. If not, I can get those to you later. The subject that we want to talk about now is actually narrows down on the subject of the last hour. And I note that we're already well into this next hour. I don't know that I can cover all this in the 45 minutes I've got. So if I run over, if you need to leave, I'm okay with that. I'll try not to keep you much longer. Okay, we live in perilous times, my brethren. And in this lesson, what I want to do is talk about a specific application of the subject of pornography as it impacts the internet. One in four men today are trapped in the net. They are caught up in the in pornography, either from a casual visit to more extensive and more bizarre things. Again, remembering evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. In addiction, wherever you start is not where you stop. When you feed it, it grows. And the more you feed it, the more perverted it becomes, as we'll point out in this lesson. I do want to try to reserve time not only to talk about internet pornography and those who are involved in that, but I also want to preserve some time in this presentation to talk about the impact on the wife or on the families that catch their loved one involved in this and the impact of that. And I also want to talk about the types of family environments that breed the personalities that end up getting caught in this particular addiction. I don't know that I can do that in the time allotted, but I'm going to attempt to do that. So let's take a quick breath and we'll get started here. In 1997, there was a survey on extramarital sex for all Americans, and basically what was reported was 20 to 25% persons who are married or who are in a relationship have stepped outside of their relationship for sexual satisfaction in the internet. The internet, the pornography that is out there, it's a big business. It grosses well over $12 million a year in the United States alone. It accounts, that's larger, that $12 billion is larger than the amounts received at box offices for rock and country music recordings, theaters, operas, and concerts combined. The internet is big business. The pornography on the internet, it is intended to seduce, to entice, and to encourage you to sign up for sites. There are a number of things out there that are the little clips or little bait that kind of gets you caught up in the particular sites. 38% of people who view the internet pornography believe that that's okay to view. 41% report that after they have viewed the pornography, that they have less attraction for their mate in their relationships. Pornography, what we're seeing out here is that men usually are attracted to the pictures, women are attracted more toward the chat rooms and toward the conversations that go online, such as in MySpace, that sort of thing. The reason for that is some of the research bears out, and that's not a blanket statement, but what the research bears out is that men typically look for passion, satisfaction, and women tend to look more for relationship. And so the diversity in kind of where they go on the websites. That's not to say that they don't visit each other's spots, but that tends to be how these cluster. Job said in Job 31, verse 1, I made a covenant with my eyes. Why then should I think upon a maid? That's a good verse. Job 31 and verse 1. The pornography, I believe, is wrong for several reasons. And I'm going to just enumerate those so that I can get on to some other material that maybe will be more practical for you. But pornography, I believe, is wrong because it is a perversion that attacks everything God cherishes most, home and family and sexual relationship. And pornography attacks that which God cherishes most. Pornography, I believe, is wrong because pornography is an enemy that destroys the innocence of children. 1 in 3 girls and 1 in 7 boys will be sexually molested by the time they're 18 years old. 77% of those who molested boys and 87% of those who molested girls said that they were regular users of hardcore pornography, visiting the very sites that pictured what they did, what they ended up doing. What that tells me, as we'll look at the stages of pornography, what that tells me is that people get worse and worse, that this stuff, if it doesn't come off the screen now in the person's life, if they continue, it will come off the screen and into real life. What the mind dwells on, the body will act on. What you feed on will come out. It will not stay where it is. That's the danger of this as an addiction. Pornography is also a lie. That when people get out here on the viewing their pornography, they sometimes think that the best sex is outside of marriage. And so I'm going to go on here online and click this mouse or do whatever I do out there to get there. And I'm going to go online here and I'm going to view this pornography. And I can see the trophy people, men and women. I can see what they do, and I get turned on by that. And here's effectively what this does. I'm going to speak very plainly in this. Effectively what pornography does is it begins significantly altering the sexual paths in the individuals that are viewing it or that are experiencing the relationship in it. And here's how it does that. The click of a mouse. Very few. I've never heard of one man even that will go online and look at one image. They click from one to the other, to the other, to the other, and what that means is rapid fire, rapid fire, rapid fire, rapid fire, and they train themselves not to be satisfied with one mate. You know what that does to what we just talked about? They train themselves, they condition themselves not to be satisfied just with one. Who are the victims? It promises things that cannot be delivered. There is no person alive that can compete with a fantasy. Because in a fantasy world, the person can be anybody that we want them to be. They can be doing anything we want them to do. And so pornography takes us into this lie that creates something that is going to be very unreal, and there'll never be a human that'll be able to satisfy that particular fantasies or those particular series of fantasies. The victims, and I do sit in groups with those that are caught up in this, and the victims, I've had several folks in groups that have gone a long way down the sexual destructive journey, and what I hear of those that are those who are the exotic dancers or strippers, is another word for it, those that are that, or those who do the male shows, the male strip shows. I've talked with many of them in different groups, and what I hear from them consistently is that those things don't particularly turn them on, and as a matter of fact, that they are ways of exploiting the people that are watching those. Here's the other thing I hear from those that have been involved in it, that the picture that is on that screen are many of the very people who have been sexually molested as children, who have been exploited all of their lives, and that those who view that are just another male or another person that's in there to use them. That's pretty sad. Using God's creatures, using pornography in that way. There are victims in pornography. And least to say, we who view this are part of the victims. We victimize ourselves. We victimize our marriage. We victimize even the church as we hold secrets in our head. And as we are on the prowl for the next fantasy fulfillment. This leads to rape and to being stalked and sexually abused. Leads to all kinds of things. The persons who are involved in the internet pornography, there are some that are at-risk users. That is, they use the computer as a means of coping with stress and anxiety and release and acceptance. And here's how this happens. Those that get involved in this, there are two high correlations here. The one is depression. We find that 48% of those males that are out there have clinical depression. But here's how it expresses itself. Not in helpless and hopeless, but in anger and frustration and in tension. And so the internet becomes a means of releasing the tension. When a person is out here scanning the pictures, then what they are effectively doing is they're looking for someone, some picture that strikes their fancy, something to victimize. And here's the other thing that's happening. Here's where the addiction piece kicks in big. They're chasing their own endorphins. You know what your endorphins are? It's like the runner's highs, the adrenaline, the endorphins. And they're chasing that. Now, here's the object of internet pornography. Here's why people bounce around a long time before they finally do their masturbation thing and end. They are riding the high. What happens while they ride that high? The world goes away. We go into a trance. We go into our fantasy world. We are in charge. And you know what messes that up? When the orgasm happens, it's over. So guess what? Internet pornography is not primarily about sexual satisfaction. It's about riding the sexual high. It's about feeding the lust that comes before the act. And that's what the internet pornography is about. That's what it feeds off of. So we see several that are different kind. We see the at-risk users. We also see those that get into it, maybe just innocently happen into the internet, but many of them have lost control of how frequently they go. They participate in it very compulsively. They are preoccupied. Remember that from the DSM diagnoses? They're preoccupied. When can they look at this thing again? They even sometimes make their plans, like the alcoholic that stores the stash or the drug addict that stores the stash, is, well, let me see if I can put that on my flash drive, or let me see if I can carry it, because if something happens, my internet doesn't work, we almost go into a panic if we can't find that object, those objects or the things that are satisfying us. So there are some very typical parallels to some of the standard addiction pieces. Now here's what these things do. The person has lost control of the frequency, and they participate in this on a compulsive level. The compulsion is fed by the obsession. The behavior continues despite the consequences. Someone walks in, someone checks the internet, and they check history, and they see where we've been, and then that's where the lying comes in. That's where the anger comes in. What are you doing looking at my stuff? That's where all that I got caught stuff comes in. Not the idea I want to quit, but why are you looking at my stuff? And we see that it negatively impacts relationship, that it causes great distrust. It creates an insecurity about within the mate about their own adequacy as a mate. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. But any type of sexual activity can become an obsession. Here's some warning signs. The person begins to isolate the social interaction, the dating, the looking for romance in real time may begin to diminish. We see the depression that kicks in with about 48% of these folks that get involved in this. And then we see the reduction in intimacy. Here's husbands and wives, and a reduction in the times that they're intimate with one another. We see increased guilt and shame, and with that sometimes comes anger. The attempts to cover up the activity by hiding or being secretive about it, repeated lies, justifications, and repeated promises to stop or change. I don't know how many people come to me the first time with their spouse, and they say, well, that's the only time I ever looked at it. It's like, well, what were you looking at? And they're describing something that folks don't look at the first time. It's like, that wasn't the first time. And so I usually ask the spouse to leave the room, and I'd share the need to be honest if we're going to have any kind of success in our counseling sessions. And then we invite the mate back in the room. There's mistrust and betrayal. Children often are exposed to what's on there hopefully accidentally if that happens. But children are often ignored and neglected. And when we begin as human beings to compare ourselves with the trophy people that are out there in these scenes, there's not many of us, if any of us, that can measure up to what's out there. And so we begin to feel inadequate. We begin to feel sexually inadequate. We also may tend to want to go out there and see if there's something out there for us. So the internet, this thing just feeds off of itself. There are some levels here I want to talk about. Again, 2 Timothy 3:13 says, evil men and seducers will wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. The idea on level one is that this is the cyber sex. It is, here's a person who's just starting out. There's self-satisfaction, that is, they masturbate, and there's exploration online, kind of the curiosity. That's level one. Level two starts to cross over the line into real time. And that's where the person begins going to various sites, the exhibition, the voyeurism, public sex, anonymous sex, obscene phone calls, fraudering. May not be a term you're familiar with, but basically what fraudering is, you ever been bumped into and didn't think it was on accident, like a crowded elevator, somebody hugged you too tight, and that's not a hug, it's a feel? That's fraudering, okay? It's people that are bumping into you intentionally, but it looks accidental. There's things like upskirting, all that goes with level two. In level three, there's the escort services, there's the strip clubs, there's the high-risk behaviors, and there's a whole plethora of kinky activities that go in there, including sexual toys and various paraphernalia. In level four, that's where we find most of our serious crimes. That is, with rape and child molestation, the obtaining and using of child porn, which, by the way, is illegal. You can get arrested for what you pop up on your screen. And the sexual abuse, and this is a big one now, sexual abuse of older adults. Who would have ever thought it? Incest, and then level five is not publishable to go on your website. I'll share that some other time if you'd like. Now here's the problem. There are five levels, and each one of these levels graduates to the other. What you start will take you to the next level. That's the way the stuff's designed. Like Pavlov's dog, it will take you to the next level. What you feed on is going to take you to that next level. Now, there's some consequences of this in terms of the person's emotional life, realizing we're living a double life, we're keeping secrets, we're lying, we're minimizing, we're doing cover-ups, we're having trouble keeping our mind on anything that's pure, because these pictures, once they're in our mind, they begin to flash forward. When we're in relationship with in intimacy, there's a wall that is created because the pictures don't go away. You know what that means? That means when one is being intimate with their marriage partner, those pictures, because the body remembers, those pictures create another person in the bed with us. And that just does a lot to betray intimacy. There's the self-care, the loss of time, in our lack of self-care, loss of time in our self-care, our physical maintenance. Person's health begins to suffer. They often maybe stay up late at night or at strange times to view this. It becomes an obsession, even in companies where there's zero tolerance and people are ushered out the front door for popping up stuff on their internet, and that still doesn't stop them. It's an obsession. It's an obsession. The conditioning for a person's sexual gratification is changed, because as we bounce from picture to picture to picture, just out of the curiosity, we bounce from one thing to the other, then what that significantly does is train our body's response to where we don't respond any longer the way we do with our mate in marriage. We begin responding differently. And then those who know us best begin to realize there's something different here. Something's going on. This isn't right. And then there is the blaming, the judging. Family life gets destroyed. Finances sometimes are significantly impacted. There are legal complications that can come, especially from the snuff licks or from the child porn. And people often see themselves as a victim in this. Okay, I went through that very quickly and hope I didn't bore you. Now let's get to these. Pornography, there are 10 types of internet-related sexual addicts. And in this, the 10 types are fantasy sex, the seductive role, someone trying to seduce you, just raw sex, voyeurism, that is the peeping toms, the intrusive sex, that is forcing oneself upon someone else, such as in rape or violent acts, exhibitionism, that's exposing oneself, exploitive sex, which is sex with a minor or with someone who is unsuspecting. That's where the older adults come in. There's the pain exchange. That's where the whips and the chains and hurting each other comes in. That's also where the autoerotic asphyxiation piece comes in, which is strangling someone or choking someone in order to increase the orgasmic high. There is pay for sex, so you can pay online to have someone to do whatever it is you command them to do. There's anonymous sex that a person can do online. And there is trading, which has to do with showing yourself to each other online. Those are all out there. What we see in terms of internet pornography is frequently viewing for longer periods than intended. Repeated unsuccessful attempts to stop, to back up, or to control. And then what we see is an inability to function when we're offline. I'm going to zip through a lot of these. There are some myths about internet pornography that I want to look at. Sometimes the excuses that are used is, well, it's out there, and so since it's out there, that justifies masturbation. Others say, well, it doesn't hurt anyone. It doesn't even hurt me. But the reality is it does hurt whoever's involved in this thing. It hurts the wife. It hurts the persons involved. I'll talk more about the wife in just a moment. It also helps, it helps to stimulate marital sex. Not so. When you remember the basic difference between males and females, women often find this stuff pretty gross and disgusting, whereas the man may find it a turn-on. And that talked with a woman the other day that said that her husband watches this stuff, and she said, he is so gross about that I would rather him watch that than even touch me. And what he wants me to do, he wants me to act it out, he wants me to be involved in watching it with him, and she's just totally disgusted. Very, very beautiful young lady, but somehow her husband is not interested in her, evidently. Someone says, well, it's not real life, so therefore it isn't wrong. Lust is wrong. Someone says, well, I can stop whenever I want to. My question to that person is, why don't you stop? If you can stop when you want to, why don't you? The reality is you can't. And you're fooling yourself if you think you can by yourself. Someone says, well, there's not any real consequences to it. Tell that to people in the divorce courts who go in and say, I'm not going to compete with a machine. Other excuses people make. This one has to do with the husband making demands on the wife. He's reenacting the sexual scenes that he saw on the internet. If you ever get caught up in that, I'll tell you what, and if you're the wife, it's not you he's having that moment with. It's the person on the internet, and he's using you to do it. That's what that's about. Sometimes there's the seductive lingerie. Nothing wrong with seductive lingerie for husbands and wives, but if it's to fulfill a fantasy from the internet, there is. The husband is often distracted in lovemaking by flashbacks to the pornographic images, and I'll tell you what, once those things are in your mind, they do not go away. There are some other unhealthy signs. You can look that one over. I've got way more than I can handle, so I'm going to go through a lot of these. Let's look at the addiction cycle here. This addiction cycle really portrays what goes on. I want to start at the top with the craving and the tension. And those that get caught up in the internet thing, what they often do is they get uptight, their life is stressful, they don't know how to deal with boredom, they don't know how to deal with their depression. The men who are involved in this usually do not have close male friends. That's important, because part of the recovery is developing more male bonding. But many of the men involved in this don't have close male friends. They tend to gravitate to the females. So we have the craving and the tension. Then there's some visual trigger that reminds me I can go out here and get involved in this. The pain that is there, the guilt and the shame, I don't want to do this, but I want to do this, and that ambivalence kicks in. Then there's the fantasy. Then there's the search, the connection with whatever it is we're searching for, the action of the internet, and then the fulfillment, the letdown, and get this next one, then the vow comes. I don't know what's wrong with me. I've got to quit doing this. And then, especially if they're caught, the vow and the promise, I'll never do it again. Are they lying? Maybe. Maybe not. You see, an addict can look at you and believe what they're saying, but not have the power or the ability to carry it out. And so they may not be lying to you. They just lack the ability to carry it out. Here's why such ambivalence is going on. The addiction itself brings both pleasure and destruction. It is pleasurable to be involved in this, to turn the libido on and to ride that orgasmic high. That's pleasurable, whether male or female. But on the other hand, it's destructive. And so the ambivalence, I shouldn't, but I'm going to. I shouldn't, but I'm going to. And then sometimes people want to make a deal with God. It's like, well, Lord, I can't get control of this problem, so I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to take up this or take up that and make it up to you. And so that's where that vow stage comes in. Addiction's accepted by the non-Christian world, but certainly not with the Christian world. Here's a point about neurotransmitters that are in our brain. That just like if we were pouring water down a hill, the water will find a course or channel. Inside of our brain, Dr. Amen, A-M-E-N, like amen, is one who's done some significant work on the paths of the brain. Has a specific book called Change Your Thinking, Change Your Life, or Change Your Brain, Change Your Life, something like that. And what he does is he talks about the channels in the brain and how that the brain, once it gets used to thinking a certain way, it becomes natural for it to think that way. Okay, that's where our speech patterns, that's where our, basically every habit we have, that's where that comes from. But what happens in this is once we begin training the brain to feed on pornography, then the brain is going to tend to gravitate that way, and it will desire more and more until we're so entrenched that we have the eyes full of adultery and we cannot cease from sin. The addict will continually usually try to justify their behavior. There's danger to society in terms of rape and exposure and all those sorts of things. Let me move forward here. The role of masturbation in this is that it's self-soothing. It's the release of tension, the release of stress. It's a way to maybe get out of a bad mood, and that's why a lot of folks say they do it. It's also a way to punish somebody. You're mad with your mate, you go out here and have a fantasy on the internet, and sometimes that belies marital conflict. It also is a way to escape from a difficult relationship, something we're not happy in, and it gives us the fantasy of what could be. And people go out for that reason sometime. But again, at the bottom here, this is about chasing that orgasmic high. And I'm going to ask our brother in the back here to pop up another one of... let's put on the impact on women in marriage. And I'll talk just a minute while we get that up. The impact on women in marriage. The families that these addictions come from, the sexual addictions, the pornography addictions, the families these come from often breed the kind of culture that grooms a person for this kind of behavior. Now, most families don't do this intentionally, but what we see is that about 68% of those people who go to the internet for sexual satisfaction are from families that are rigid families, but they're also disengaged. That is, there's a lot of lecturing, there's a lot of preaching, there's a lot of demanding in those families, but the families are not close. So there's a disconnect with intimacy. These are the families that people grow up in. They're taught, don't feel, don't talk, don't think, don't trust, and they're also taught, don't change. Very rigid families, that this is the way it is. And so the person grows up almost in a fog sometimes. Not knowing how to function, not knowing how to think, how to behave in normative socialization skills. The marriage union is one of one man and one woman who become one flesh. But when we add pornography, now we have another woman in the picture, or we have another person in between. As this other person comes between, the relationship changes from relationship with your companion in marriage to relationship with your objects that are on the screen. And then here's what we have. We have basically an online affair or an emotional affair, and when the man should be in this union with one man and one woman and the relationship with God in this, the two becoming one, now what we have is another party that pulls away from that relationship. The unknown person is out here, has the person who's involved in pornography, has them basically locked into a prison, the prison of their own thoughts, but the prison, nevertheless, they have the key to. The healing stages, if we're going to heal from pornography, then we're going to have to deal with the initial shock, someone caught me, and we're going to have to deal with that. That often is the point at which the congregation, somebody from the congregation gets a call, my husband did this or my wife's into that, and then there's the initial shock as people kind of get used to the idea that something serious is going on. And then we have the grieving process that usually involves tears and the statements, I'll never do it again, or the hedging on the issues, well, it was just that one time, or that kind of those kinds of things. Then we move to a repair stage. But I want to suggest something. If we don't get honest in stages one or two, there's no way we can repair in stage three. And especially if there are multiple times that we're catching people or that people are involved in this. The repairs can't take place until we get honest with what's really going on. Again, remember that we said that underneath all of this is pain of some sort. For many men, and women, listen up close, for many men, the issues with pornography did not begin in the marriage. In fact, it's for most men. With many men, the issues with pornography begin way back with the false introduction to sexuality. That's why we said what we said in the very first part of this lesson. There are 12 tasks that a healing wife has to be involved in. These are the things that will heal. And this is the issues. Righteousness versus reputation. The wife kind of goes through this, or the person who is their mate's been unfaithful. The attitude that we would like to see is, I know right is right, and I will do it even if people find out we have a problem. I'm going to do the right thing. As the mate, I'm going to do the right thing. I'm not going to hide your sin. I'm not going to be an enabler. I'm not going to be codependent. I'm not going to help you stay sick. And so that's a righteous attitude. Versus, oh, I can't tell. What will the church think? You see how one is as sick as the secrets you keep, and the other is as open as we have a problem and we need help. That's what you wives or husbands that or families that get people involved in this, that's what you can do. Sometimes there's all or nothing thinking going on. No marriage is perfect. It's going to take time to produce one that will be perfect and will have the fruit of love. Now, let me say this, that internet pornography can be put into remission. I don't know that it can ever be cured because it's an addiction. We don't speak of addictions in terms of cured. But we can put it into such a remission that it's a distant memory instead of a present pain. So here's the person says, well, I'll never have the marriage I dreamed of. That's about loss. That's about sitting in our misery versus being proactive and saying that my marriage isn't perfect, but it can be better, and we're going to get some help. And that's where a person says we're going to go where the help is. There's also responsibility. That is, the person there takes charge. Responsibility versus blame. I can only take responsibility for myself. And it is not your fault that he has a problem or that she has a problem. Versus, I'm going to blame myself. If I was a better wife, if I was a better husband, if I had done this, if I had done that, we're not out here blaming ourselves. Now, I'm going to say this as a qualifier for that. Sometimes we do need to look at ourselves very closely. And usually in this, we need to examine ourselves first and clean up our side of the street. But often, this is not something that is the other person's fault at all. The issue with the addict lies with the addict. The issue with codependency lies with the codependent. Self-care. If he does leave me, it's not because of me, and I can take care of myself. I'll be okay. Versus, if I don't get help to change him, then he'll leave me. Now, you see that this abandonment thing? It's like the woman in this picture seems to think that it's all her job to fix him, and it's not her job. That's his job. The person who's involved in the sin, that's their job to fix it. It's not our job. It's our job to coach and to encourage and to be a support, even as the wife in this picture should be. Then there's the abundant giving versus the self-sacrifice. Here's the negative. Well, if I sacrifice more of myself, then he'll get better. I knew one woman that even went on a diet. She lost about 50 pounds and didn't have 50 pounds to lose so that she would look like the women on the screen. And guess what? That didn't stop his addiction. All it did was make him more critical of her and her more ashamed of herself. The abundant giving is, I'll care for my husband and my children out of the abundance of God's blessings for me. I will do what God wants me to do. I'll be the kind of wife I need to be. I will be healthy whether he is or not. He has work to do, or she has work to do. The spiritual thing is that God is our strength. Your husband or your companion is not your strength. God is your strength. Sometimes we end up with, well, what would I do without him? Or I can't live without him. That's just a bunch of fantasy out there. We can live fine if it comes to that. Versus the person that says, I just can't deal with this pain. That's sitting in the problem. And if it's costing money at the bank, Get your own bank account. Acceptance versus approval. You can't approve of their addiction, but what you can do is accept the fact they have a struggle and help them work through that struggle. Finally, live in the present time. We can take this one day at a time, and God will give us the strength to make it through this day. Versus, I'm just waiting for him to change so I can be happy again. If you do that, then you're actually feeding the problem instead of helping the problem. Self-trust versus denial. I trust my good judgment, and I trust it, and it saved me from much pain. Versus, well, he has a convincing argument, and maybe it's about me, and so I'll go along with that and see what more I can do. You can give 110, 120%. But if that person's hung up on their addiction, they'll revert to their addiction. Let's go, here's some websites. Let's go to that next PowerPoint, and I'm going to go through that very quickly. What is it called? Sexual Addiction 09. No, this is one. Good. All right. What we see in families that are caught up in creating the atmosphere that breeds sexual addiction is there is an awful lot of perfectionism, perfectionistic demands, conditional love, we will only love you if, and also a real low concept of the us in the marriage. It's more about survival for the individual. And we see that. Again, the unspoken family rules. And we have a shame-based environment. Often there is shame surrounding sex. We don't talk about it. We don't discuss it. If the subject comes up, we don't know how to deal with it. In those families, our children, we may not even have the talk with them. And I can't tell you how many people that have been in groups that I've conducted that have never even had the talk. There was one woman, she was 18 or 19 years old when I first met her, and her whole concept of what a date was when a guy asks you on a date that he wanted to take you to a place, so you go to a place, you get something to eat, and then you go home and get in bed. That's a date. And so when she was saying yes, that's what someone had told her, that's what a date was. And it's like, well, and I called her by name, it's like, that's not what a date is. You know, and where did you learn? And truth is, she had never learned about the facts of life or about what normal socialization was. She had believed somebody's lie. So the family environment of sexual addiction can be fed by misinformation, by no information. And let's just take this in pair here. The addictive behavior, we have the addict and the codependent parent. This is how this stuff breeds itself. And that is the addicted to something. Now remember, addictions can be manyfold. It can be chemical addictions. It can be food addictions. It can be gambling addictions. It could be whatever obsessive compulsions are going on in this family. This is the cycle that is being fed here. And so we have a codependent parent. The husband and wife are almost in competition to sustain each other, and the children get left out in these relationships. And the child often splits and detaches from their feelings because they're deprived of the feelings from mom and dad. This is your rigid, disconnected family. They're not enmeshed. The child then gets the feeling that I'm a bad kid. Or the child gets the feelings of guilt and shame. Something's wrong with me. And with that something's wrong with me, now comes, well, if something's wrong with me, then I'm ashamed of who I am. And then we begin to seek approval for love by various performances. And when that doesn't work, now we go out here into our fantasy world, and what we often are looking for is acceptance. And if we can't find it in real life, what we'll find it in is the internet. All of this is about acting out of shame, that I'm not important, I'm not good enough, something's wrong with me, no one wants to be around me, and we find a fantasy world where we could be everything that we ever dream we could be. that sexual anorexia is a response thing. Okay, somewhere in here I have how to fix this thing. Let me talk to you about how to fix it. Okay, ways to fix this, first, we have to stop the behavior. That's got to stop. Let me tell you very clearly, you can go to heaven without a computer. You really can. It doesn't take a computer to get to heaven. And I think that if our computers are going to keep us out of heaven, we need to throw them as far as from us as we can possibly do it. If we can't control it, get rid of it. If we don't want to take that extreme of a measure, then there are things, there are nanny protectors and all, but those are so interesting that people can usually figure a way around that if they want to. So we can do some kind of protection on that. The other thing is put your computer in a central spot where everybody can see it. Have hours that it's okay to be on the computer and that it's not okay. Regularly check your history. There are some sites, and some of those are questionable, but there are some sites or some programs you can get that actually will send a report back to your mate once a month, tell what sites you visited and how frequently. So you may be interested in something like that. There's some questions that computer geeks have about that, but you can talk to them about that. There are, obviously, we want to pray about it. Obviously, there needs to be repentance. And obviously, if we're in a married relationship and this is going on, then we need to build more intimacy with our mate. Now, I didn't say go jump in the bed. What I said is build intimacy. To repair the damage, we have to go back to the very basic level of communication. And we have to learn how to talk as husband and wife together. To share what kind of a day it was. What our joys and our sorrows and our thoughts of our mind are. We need to learn to laugh together. And then over time, what can happen is there can be those romantic moments. But romance in itself doesn't spell sexual intimacy. We need to be romantic. We need to court each other. One of the sad things about our marriages in our day and time is we're too busy to spend time with each other and to do the very things that brought us together in the first place. We just kind of stopped doing that. And then we wonder what's going on with us. So learn how to build relationship. Remember what I said, guys, that the women generally want relationship. Without that, the other part doesn't mean much. So build relationship. And then there comes the sharing of secrets. Then there's best friends. And then in marriage, then it's after that that the sexual intimacy kicks in. Being married is not easy work. But taking a shortcut on the internet is not the way to build your marriage. That's the way to destroy it. So what I would say to those that are who are struggling with this issue is first, do not try to do it by yourself. Just as in any other addiction, you need to own the problem, you need to acknowledge the need for help, you need to have people identified who are going to help you that you check in with. If it's a male, you're going to need to develop some male friendships. If it's a female, you're going to need to develop some same gender friendships. Those are the things that help to kind of round the person out socially where this doesn't have quite the pull that it does when you don't have those circles of people. We need to be the kind of people that can share what's going on with us, that when we are in our moments of temptation, we have an escape plan. That's true with any addiction. You need your escape plan. And not only plan A, you need plan B, C, D, E, and F. Because sometimes plan A and B and C don't materialize like they should. Let me give you an example of that. And I'll use the substance dependency as the thing. There was a fellow that had a plan for the weekend, And he said, well, here's how I'm going to stay sober this weekend. My wife and I are going up to see some folks, and blah, 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 blah. Long story short, the weekend came, and that event got canceled. Some people called. The wife said, well, we're going shopping. You want to join us? So she goes over and joins them. The guy's sitting home by himself. Football game's about to come on. That's a trigger for him. He's in his recliner where he always drank. Phone rings. Hey, what are you doing? Well, I'm just sitting here. He didn't have a plan. He was bored. And then, will we ever come over? They come over. They've got a 12-pack. You see how all this goes together? Because he didn't have a plan. When we get caught up in this, it's because we don't have a plan of how we're going to counter it. So again, we go back to, what are you going to do instead of? You can't live in a vacuum. Quitting's part of it. But the other part is, what are you going to do instead of it? And that's about building a plan. That plan needs to involve people, not isolation. It needs to involve fellowship or communication with other people. And those are ways in which that you can get through this. When it's difficult for you, you need to be able to talk about it. And you need to have someone that you can talk to. Preferably a male if it's a male, a female if it's a female. By the way, older women are to teach the younger women how to love their husband. And that's something that older women can be involved in. While the Bible's specific about that piece, I believe that older men can have a role in this too. There are a number of young men who grow up without a dad, who grow up without that male bonding, who grow up without that closeness. Someone asked me one time, well, Art, what do you do if you grew up and you didn't have a dad in your life and nobody was the dad? Or the dad was so rotten that nobody even wanted him around. So what do you do? And the answer that I usually give them is, why don't you adopt a new one? Why don't you find someone that's what you think they ought to be, that can be your male role model or your female role model, and adopt them? And ask them, do you care if I kind of treat you like a dad or like a mom? And sometimes you'll be real interested in the response. It's a very pleasant response. There's a lot of things people have that they can teach, and you meet each other's needs. So adopt somebody. And what you will find is, the more your mind does the diverting, the more your mind leaves the channels of the familiar, the easier it will become to deal with the issue. Not by avoiding the issue. You address the issue, but you also have the means of diversion and your plan of escape. I've even gone so far with some as to say, what you need to do is to type out what your plan is, and you need to keep it in your pocket. And when you feel that thing coming on, pull out your plan and follow that plan. That's not a plan, that's a room key. But what you need to do is to follow your plan, and that way you're going to be able to do that diversion. Pray for each other. The effectual prayer of righteous man avails much. We confess our faults one to another, and we're going to talk more about that tomorrow in some of our presentations. But by all means, what we have to do is stop this stuff. We cannot go to heaven if we're going to bring somebody else in here that's going to be an object of lust, and we just can't do it. Just can't do it. Pornography is rampant. Sometimes you may stumble on a place. Get out of it as quick as you can. That's our lesson for today. I don't know about you, I'm a little tired right now. You may be as tired of hearing as I'm feeling right now. But hopefully we've been able to gain some things today. And if you want copies of some of the lessons, especially the earlier lesson where I machine gunned you with verses, I'm sure somebody here would be glad to make you one. I'll make that available to you. Thank you so much for your time. And I think we need a good night's rest, a good evening sharing whatever you want to share. And by all means, turn this thing off. Learn how to deal in real time with real people. That's our lesson. Thank you.